Details on our website at kboo.fm/evening news. For KBOO News In Depth, easy for me to say, I'm Michelle Coppola.
Thank you, Michelle. You're listening to KBOO 90.7 FM, Portland, Oregon. The time is 6 o'clock. Up next is Labor Radio.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is also available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Board meetings will be conducted at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The KBOO Board of Directors meets the fourth Monday of the month, starting at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held.
Thank you, baby. I just wanna take a little time out to you. Thank you, baby.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you for contributing to KBOO's membership drive. And we couldn't have done it without you.
Thank you for your post, for your like, for your click. Tumation Nita Tati DG. Thank you for your love, for your care, for your kind.
To you, the 9-to-5er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Welcome to Labor Radio. I am your host, Michael Cathcart. Joining me, as always, is...
Elliot Gilliland, thanks.
And a special guest this evening joining us in the studio as well is...
Nick Bubb. It's good to be back.
Yeah, Nick, for anyone who has been listening for a while, Nick and I co-hosted this show for a long time. And prior to that, Nick was the sole host of this show. So it's great to have you back in the studio, Nick. You want to tell us a little bit about where you've been for the last year or so?
So I've actually had a great opportunity to travel the world. And so I've been going around Europe and seen some interesting things. I've seen some French protests.
Yeah.
Which is...
Yellow vests.
Yeah, you know, and when those guys protest, it's they do it right. They do it right. Right now, they've got the pension reform going on where they want to raise the pension age and change everybody's individual pension to a more community one that's worse for most of them, but better for some.
Mm-hmm.
And so, of course, they're an all-out... I don't want to call it warfare, but I mean, you got police shooting tear gas at firefighters and firefighters shooting the fire hoses at the police. You know, maybe warfare's not that far off.
Yeah, I mean, if you're basically, they're warring in the streets. I mean, I don't know what else you'd refer to it as.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I'm glad you're safe, but that's amazing that you've been experiencing that, seeing that over there. And actually, you know, the fact that you are just visiting us from Europe right now,
mm-hmm.
we're going to be getting into some discussion here about... you know, the American political scene right now, and specifically the Democratic candidates for office, and discussing their approaches to labor and to working people in general.
Mm-hmm.
But you have been basically, you know, experiencing what social democracy is like in mm-hmm. you know, up close and personal. So you can certainly lend some insight into to the policies that we're going to be discussing here.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So, you know, just to jump in, because we always run out of time at the end before we realize.
Right.
yeah, as you remember. We're going to discuss, as I just mentioned, the Democratic candidates, the field that is still remaining for Democratic presidential.
It's narrowed slightly, but yes.
Yes, absolutely.
Like, maybe more than slightly, but yeah.
Yeah.
Seems like a good time to be able to jump in and kind of see where mm-hmm. everyone stands in terms of labor.
Right. I mean, it narrowed since I started doing the research for this a little while ago anyways. So yeah, we're going to be discussing all the candidates with definitely a focus on the ones that are a little bit more pro-labor or just generally have more fleshed out policies regarding working people in general.
Mm-hmm.
All the candidates in the Democratic field that are, you know, front runners or at least like, you know, polling and on the debate stage, they all do have pretty pro-worker stances.
Yep, they check a lot of boxes. Mm-hmm. I think longtime listeners will, you know, remember the PRO Act, which right. we've kind of hammered into the ground, but almost all of them are pro on the PRO Act. So,
pro.
I mean, I think we can kind of run through kind of just all of the good stuff that is now not taken for granted, but is just part of, basically has to be part of your platform to run as a Democrat in 2020.
Absolutely.
You know, so we've got the federal minimum wage at $15. We obviously, part of the PRO Act, we want to end right to work laws that are mm-hmm. going to kind of restrict, you know, all the stuff that we've talked about
yep.
With unions. And then obviously, so far, all of the main candidates also, you know, want to give power to unions through card check.
Right.
Which we might not have time to get into today, but we could do, you know, in a later episode.
Do a whole show on that.
There's also, it's very wide ranging, but in some form, all of the candidates guarantee paid sick and parental right. leave, which is really great. And I think when we break down the individual candidates, you'll see that varies, but they all have it in some manner, which
Absolutely.
Is really great.
Yeah, and so there are other issues like that where
gig workers. Yeah. I think everyone's pretty pro, you know, banning the use of permanent replacement workers, things like that.
Correct. Mm-hmm. And yeah, allowing gig workers and contract workers to unionize.
Yep.
You know, not everyone has laid out a plan for that, but most people have paid at least lip service to wanting mm-hmm. to allow that to happen.
Mm-hmm. And card check is part of it, but I think everyone has come out in some form, even Biden, saying that, you know, companies and corporations shouldn't be able to intimidate or sway kind of these elections. So I think all of that going in is good, you know, before we kind of go in and nitpick.
And so, yeah, you know, there's a lot of things that are on the Democratic platform, the party platform itself, that are adopted by these candidates. And then there are some things that go a little bit beyond that. But,
yep.
you know, they are generally in favor of, like we were just mentioning. Then we get into the issues that there is a little more divergence in.
Yes.
Where you sort of, you know, separate the you know, centrists from progressives, leftists from whatever you want to call it.
I call it, yeah. who leaves the door open?
Yeah.
Just who leaves the door open? And I think you'll find we do a good job of kind of calling that out.
Yeah, like worker supporters versus worker reformers, you know, I don't
yes.
know, whatever you want to call it there. But, you know, just going into the big issues that right up front, you know, obviously a big one that is discussed in the debate stage but maybe isn't fleshed out enough is the concept of guaranteed jobs, which, you know, is, depending on which candidate you're talking about and which policy, which plan you're looking at, it comes in different forms. But the concept of as long as you are of capable working age and physical ability in this country, you should be able to have a job if you want a job. Not every candidate has in fact endorsed that idea, and as it stands right now, only Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders have actually put forward plans to bring about guaranteed jobs for everyone. So, you know, essentially full employment or a full employment economy. They, you know, none of the other candidates have even really spoken too much to that idea. I read an interview with Amy Klobuchar where she was asked about the concept of, like, are you for guaranteed jobs? And she kind of obfuscated and went yeah. into, well, we need retraining for workers and industries that are going to be phased out and this kind of thing, but never really got back to the core, you know, classic debate tactic. Mm-hmm. Never actually answered the question that was posed to you.
Oh, sure. I mean, in all fairness, I mean, just in yeah. full transparency, I was Yang Gang. So my horse is now out of the race, but,
so you're a free agent.
Now I'm a free agent. Now tonight's show is going to help me as much as it's going to help all the listeners.
Good.
As I you know, figure out who I think is going to be best for workers.
Yeah, and you yourself, you are still or have been a member of the Pipe Fitters Union?
Yeah, no, I'm still current on my dues. Still Great. Pay every month, and I'm proud of that. They did a lot for me. They opened up the opportunities that I have that I'm taking advantage of
yeah.
now. And so I'm paying it back.
Nice.
Yeah.
We have a list written down of all the different union endorsements for different candidates.
Mm-hmm.
I've not yet seen that.
I mean, you know, they're starting to roll in, but
yeah.
I think that might come later in the cycle.
Right.
There's been a lot of articles and talk online about how last cycle a lot of the labor unions jumped out in support of Clinton right away
without even
and their
Sanders.
Bases yeah. kind of didn't agree with it mm-hmm. and when the election turned I think a lot of people took flack for it
yeah
and so they're all kind of sitting around you know like I know right away the firefighters came out for Biden
right I think one he, of the big he ones. Announced wow. in front of them I believe
yeah, right? yeah. yeah yeah so you know there has been some action there but I think a lot of the unions are waiting to see how it shakes out before they kind of make yeah. a decision.
And you know, we'll come back around to that because we have a few more statistics, but I think you're absolutely right that a lot of people have, you know...
they are doing it in other ways.
Oh, absolutely.
Because we saw, was it last week or the week before... gosh, I'm blanking on the union now, but they put out those cards that were kind of describing the healthcare from all of the...
yeah.
So, I mean, there is definitely...
The culinary workers
that's Nevada. Sorry, that's mm-hmm. what it was. It was yeah, the yeah. Nevada culinary workers, thank you. And they basically put out a card kind of trying to state the facts on all of the different kind of platforms mm-hmm. and maybe not all of it was entirely accurate. And so there's definitely there some movement. It's just not in the form of endorsements.
So is that the union that took a little bit of heat for criticizing Medicare for All?
Yes.
They said, well, see, and the thing where unions need to reinvent their purpose is really the full package of representing workers because
right.
we have very, very little bargaining power aside from standing all together.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some unions that unfortunately feel like the only reason their workers are with them is for the medical benefits,
right.
which union medical benefits are better than non-union medical benefits
Absolutely.
Most of the time.
Yeah.
And if we go to a Medicare for All, they might feel like they're losing, you know, some sway there.
And it's actually, I mean, just if you think about the history of labor unions in this country versus in other countries, that is sort of the big difference between American labor unions and a lot of labor unions in, you know, Western Europe and other developed countries. Is just that, like, the pivotal element for an American labor union was securing healthcare, negotiating great healthcare with their individual employers
mm-hmm.
versus, you know, because in other countries there was just guaranteed healthcare nationally.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And so that was sort of the big selling point for joining the union. And I think that we definitely are seeing, although maybe the membership of a lot of these unions do support plans for Medicare for All or expanded healthcare options, the top brass maybe are hesitant to endorse anyone because that is sort of their final bargaining chip in a situation in a labor movement that is on its heels right now.
To be honest, that is the single most important issue to me and is why I was such a big Bernie supporter in 2016.
Yeah.
I feel that every person should have a right to medical care.
Absolutely. I mean, it's a basic human right that I don't think should be necessarily left up to the whims of the market. It should be something that is provided by our government that we pay taxes into.
And
And
frankly, I'm frankly surprised there's opposition to it. I think the only thing that I hear is like, well, you don't want the government managing your health care, right? Well, you know, if you're left on your own to manage your own health care, maybe you don't have it at all. Maybe there's people that just don't get treatment. And that's where I'm coming from.
Right.
I think it's good for workers, and I think it's great for businesses because it's really hard to start a small business when you can't get good employees because you can't afford to pay for a health care plan for them. It's really expensive.
Absolutely. And you're also, you know, from the worker side, you're not tethered to a job that is giving you good benefits simply because you don't want to lose those. You mm-hmm. are free to move around how you...
Yep.
You are interested to do or how you want to do. I think a lot of the opposition to it is fairly disingenuous or coming from a point of view of either.
It's usually cost, choice,
right.
and like wait time is basically the kind of main three ones I see. But on a previous episode, we dove like very deep into kind of some of the reasons why you really don't want to privatize education.
Right.
And I think us and a lot of the listeners probably would agree that healthcare is something along those lines where when you privatize it and you make it based on, you incentivize it based on profit, there are a lot of things that can get dropped in chase of those. So,
I mean, there's some basic things that should be away from the profit motive, you know, moved away from that. I think education, like you just said, healthcare are two very big things, you know, and then that we, you know, what we're sort of moving into here is candidates supporting things like housing. Is that a mm-hmm. human right, or is that something that should be left up to the whims of the market? You know, things like that. Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren have both come out in favor of, you know, different, not the exact same policies, but different versions of providing, you know, housing for all as well.
Mm-hmm.
That is something that not every candidate has been nailed down on specifically or come out with specific policies on those issues. Someone like a Joe Biden might pay lip service to the idea of like everyone has a right to housing or something like that, but not necessarily like we are going to invest heavily in subsidized housing and make sure that there is affordable housing available, you know, or even, you know, concepts like rent control and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, you know, I think in my personal opinion, that is another thing that is solidly should fall at least, you know, to a degree outside of the full whims of the market. I think that people there should not be people living without homes who don't want to be.
Mm-hmm.
Just moving along in terms of issues we got. So yeah, we went through the basic, you know, things that a lot of the candidates agree on.
Yeah, the boxes that everyone's kind of checking now. You know, modern elections, what you have to check.
Right, and you know, moving into things like a big thing that I think affects workers and generally the balance of the economy is the concept of having workers placed on the boards of the companies they work for, on corporate boards.
Mm-hmm.
There are only two candidates, again, you know, this is going to be a trend here, but there's only two candidates that do support a policy of mandating that there are seats for workers in the boardroom of all the corporations that these people work for. And can you guess who they are?
You know, if I had to take a stab at it, I'm going to go ahead and guess that it's Bernie and Elizabeth.
Nicely done. 100%
What do I win?
You win... more information.
One more minute of airtime. Come on.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. We'll stay a little bit over. But yeah. So those two are the only ones that have come out with anything remotely resembling the concept of, you know, that's a step towards the idea of worker run co-ops in a way. You know, I mean, it's certainly a transitional step towards that is not fully there, but that is a step on the road to having more worker control of the, you know, more democratic control of the workplace.
Mm-hmm.
I believe, you know, for the three of us in this room, we probably understand, and probably most listeners, but I bet there's somebody that's got the radio on that doesn't understand the full role of a board of directors.
Right.
What is the significance of having employee representation on a board of directors, you guys?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you want to jump in on that, but like the board of directors essentially is the ones who...
They're the ones that are beholden to the stakeholders. So basically, they're the ones making decisions for the company. So when you have someone whose primary motive is in addition to profits, obviously, because I think everyone wants the company to do well. But, you know, I think when you care about the workers and the kind of the long-term sustainable nature of a business, that'll change how a board operates.
Right.
But I mean, fundamentally, until I think all the people have kind of ownership and equity, then it's harder to kind of make that happen. Even if you place kind of a couple people on there that might make a close vote go one way. But I don't know. I think, as you said, I think it's a step.
Right. It's certainly
in the direction,
a reform.
And it's a step that keeps the current system and all of the flaws and the systemic issues that we have with it, and kind of helps shift the balance. But again, it's the same system. So
yeah, and like just an example of what having workers in that room might do would be if there was the question put in front of the board of like, do we close down this plant? Do we offshore these jobs? You know, something like that. You know, oftentimes there's no one representing the workforce in that room. There's maybe no direct connection to that. So even if the board members may be sympathetic to the idea of saving the jobs, if it's presented to them, that may not even be an idea that's brought up in the context of that debate within the boardroom. So having workers in there, I think, is even if again it doesn't actually go the way they want, at least injecting that perspective into the room is. You know, it's a step in the right direction. It is certainly not the end game.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, you know, along those lines, there are a number of other policies, you know, both Senator Warren and Senator Sanders have put forward really robust pro-worker platforms.
Yep.
Which, you know, we can, if you go to their websites or you listen to them talk about it, there's just like 100 pages for each of these plans. I mean, it's very comprehensive for both of them. But a big plan that Bernie has put forward is the concept of a workplace democracy plan, which, you know, that the one of the major steps is having workers' seats in the boardroom.
Well, I mean, I was just going to say, I think Bernie said it all, you know, as he's kind of done his campaigning. I mean, he wants to double the amount of union,
right.
Like people who are a part of unions, right? So we've shrunk basically since... I forget exactly by how much, but over the last like 50 years or plus years, the amount of people in unions has shrunk dramatically.
Mm-hmm.
But there's still a really large part of the voting audience, right? So I think in 2016 it was 15 or 18% between there. Basically all voters had a household with at least one union member in it. Mm-hmm. So again, it's still a powerful group, but Bernie wants to make it bigger. And I think that's an important part to call out when we're going through each one of these plans, is because a lot of them are, while they're good for the worker, they're not necessarily built to kind of see sustained growth.
Yeah. And that is something that I think specifically these two candidates, you know, that they are far, you know, way more out in front of the other candidates in recognizing the role that unions play in creating a robust middle class and strengthening, you know, workers. One thing that I notice just by reading over their websites and listening to them talk, another, like, Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders are the only two candidates that routinely center the concept of, like, the working class or working people versus the phrase middle class, which, I mean, you know, they've been used, I think, interchangeably in this country for the last 40 years or so, but there is a distinct difference, and I think that, you know, it's maybe the middle class is an aspirational thing. It's a thing you want to attain, but the vast majority of Americans right now are solidly working
class. Yeah, I mean, and you're not going to see someone like Joe Biden come out and say that the government won't accept contracts of places that don't, you know, have the things in place that they see as kind of necessary for workers. So I think those are the kind of things that Elizabeth Warren and kind of Bernie are alone on.
Correct.
You know, again, we've talked a lot about checking the boxes today, but they're the ones kind of actually talking about actions and, you know, different things. And I think Bernie, you know, right away would probably step in, and I think he has a plan for all the executive orders he would do on day one.
Right.
So it's a lot more detailed, and you can go to a site to see all that stuff.
Yeah, definitely give a visit to all these sites, and there's a lot more information than we can lay out in the 30 minutes we have here.
Yeah.
But yeah, those two specifically, and Bernie very, very much individually also centers working class people and labor unions as the sole focus of what his presidency would be about.
Yeah, and it's hard to question him on it because he's got an extremely long record of doing it.
Yeah, exactly.
That Democracy Act that you were talking about, he basically introduced in like the early 90s and has basically brought it up every single year since. So I think his track record speaks for itself. And while Warren's record is shorter than Bernie's, I think she's, you know, especially as people are kind of looking around, and she has basically built the reputation of the fact that she is really good at legislating,
right?
And she's very good at creating plans and different things like that, and she's had created some really interesting ways that can help labor in addition to kind of the normal ones that we've been talking about, like right to work and card check and all these things. So
yeah, like the two of them seem to have come up with comprehensive plans to move beyond simply restoring worker protections that existed prior to 2016, or, you know, making them slightly more robust. And the two of them have really put forward ways to move beyond that and to grow the power of unions and strengthen them, and, you know, and grow the primacy of working people within our political system in a way that no other candidate is really putting forward.
Yep.
And, you know, that's also pretty evident in the way that they get funded. Their campaigns are funded. I mean, you know, Bernie famously has said that he does not accept donations from big money donors. Yep. No corporate PACs, none of that. So it's largely, you know, his funding largely comes from small dollar donations and working people. Elizabeth Warren similarly has received a large contribution, a set of her contributions from working people and from smaller smaller dollar donations. And then as you move down the field, there are more PACs and there are more bundlers and billionaires and wine caves and things like that that come into play for the funding.
Good old wine caves, man. Right. How do I get involved in that, man?
I know. It was funny to see people defending the concept of having a secret meeting in a wine cave. I mean, like, obviously it's just another donor meeting in a really weird setting, but like,
yeah,
just the amount of people that came out in cape for that was pretty interesting.
Yeah.
Wow. I thought, yeah, I mean, that was a strange news cycle when that came around. But yeah, just moving along through.
Yeah, So like, I mean, again, we could kind of go really deep into these plans, but I think
each
Warren and Bernie really kind of differentiate themselves from the rest of the group. And, you know, below them, you've basically got Amy, Biden, and Pete.
Right.
So, I mean, we touched on a little bit, but Amy's plan is pretty vague, though, again, she checks all the boxes that we're looking for in kind of terms of, you know, contemporary elections and, you know, what that looks like in terms of labor. So we won't touch too much on that. But I think it is important to kind of talk a little bit about Biden, who, you know, does have a labor record and has, he's been out there, you know, especially during this cycle,
right?
With the workers and things like that. However, I do think it's important to note he's very good at signaling, and his website doesn't have a ton about what he would actually do on day one.
No,
so it's hard to find hard evidence of what exactly he would do immediately upon coming into office.
That's another difference that I really noticed between specifically Bernie and Warren versus all the other candidates, including, you know, the ones who have since dropped out, that there is specific policies and plans in place versus the rest of them. There's a lot of like paragraphs of ideas and values and leading with our values and this kind of thing, but not a lot of like, we are going to implement this on day one. This is the plan for housing. This is the plan for rebalancing the economy, all those things.
And something even like Social Security, where that's not always exactly a part of the labor negotiations, but does affect how people live their lives, especially towards the end of it. So, you know, different things like that, where he has, you know, stuff has come up around his record around it and his kind of reluctance to answer questions and things like that. So I think it is, while maybe not directly tied to labor, does affect the situation.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. And then finally, there's Pete, which I think is a really interesting place to talk about leaving the door open. So the theme on his site is a new rising tide.
Right.
So I think, again, Pete checks all of the kind of benchmarks that we've seen kind of crop up, the $15 minimum wage, the end the right to work. A key difference between him and Bernie is he has kind of smartly, though not super accurately, coined this phrase, Medicare for all who want it.
Yeah,
so
just totally
and basically like a very kind of 1,000-foot view, which is hard to do on stuff like this because it's so complicated. But basically, it would kind of allow you to keep your current plan and introduce a government-owned kind of similar, you know, expanding Obamacare, different things like that. So there would be a government option, right? And that government option would negotiate prices, right? Or attempt to, if, you know, I think everyone here, all of the candidates here in the primary want to start negotiating drug prices, right? So in this plan, I think it's assumed that this government option would attempt to do that. But, you know, it's really interesting when you have this multi-payer system, right? And you introduce a government option and different things like this. It actually, while on its face, you don't kind of question it, but then up front, you know, it has some thing, especially when Pete first introduced it, he didn't say kind of how many drugs he would force the administration to negotiate, right? So then if a Republican basically took over the seat, they could just say, we don't want to negotiate, right? So there's different little loopholes by not kind of going all the way. You leave the door open for these changes to not really take effect. So something like a, you know, a Medicare for all, that doesn't really do that, because obviously there isn't a multi-payer system where you could kind of go around and, you know, there's inherently less choice, kind of in quotes. But a lot of the times people don't have a choice anyways.
Yeah.
Like, you can go to a hospital that's in your network and then get a surgery that's not from a doctor that's in your network. Right.
And,
so there's a lot of
80% of it covered by your insurance company, and the other 20% forces
you
into bankruptcy.
Yeah. I mean, obviously I think choice is a little bit of a false narrative around kind of what we have now.
What about this one? Which candidates are talking about tuition forgiveness?
I think that at this point there are...
They've had to address it, basically.
They have at the debates. Absolutely. They've had to address it. I think that there's two, potentially three, that have actual plans for it. I don't know if you have that the numbers written, but I was looking through their actual websites, and there's...
Even Pete has partial forgiveness. How much it is, but they've all again, I think it's one of those check boxes where kind of when Bernie set the standard, then they all had to fall.
Yeah. And it is interesting that Pete, more so than almost any of the other candidates besides, you know, or at least than the ones that are in the front runners, Pete does seem to, on at least in a lot of ways, fall in line with some of the ideas and the values that Warren and Sanders have put forward, but then it's a lot of like half measures or a lot of, like you said, leaving the door open so that if, you know, there can be reforms later on.
And again, I think too, like a Medicare for all who want it, I know this is labor focused, but that doesn't, there are lots of people who don't have it, who want it, but can't afford it, right? So that also doesn't take into effect that. I think it's important to note.
Yeah. Unfortunately, we are fully out of time now, so we're going to move on. But thank you again for joining us. This has been Labor Radio. I'm your host, Michael Cathcart. Thank you, Nick, for joining.
And thanks for having me again.
Yeah, thanks for being back. And Elliot,
you guys.
Yeah, it's great to have you here. Have a great night.
Thanks.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
KABU Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Create and Celebrate, a night celebrating Black creativity and power on Wednesday, February 19th from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Grant High School Auditorium. KABU Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Create and Celebrate, a night celebrating Black creativity and power on Wednesday, February 19th from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Grant High School Auditorium in Portland. Create and Celebrate is a showcase of young Black creative talent, including performances of poetry, dance, and music from students across Portland. Again, that's Create and Celebrate, a night celebrating Black creativity and power on Wednesday, February 19th from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Grant High School Auditorium, 2245 Northeast 36th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kabu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad.
Good evening.